You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Congratulations to the Lakers. They won the franchise's 17th championship. Certainly the strangest one for both the team and the four-time champion LeBron James. And not because of how they won. On Sunday night, they showed that they're simply a better team than the Miami Heat. And I'm not going to take anything away from the Heat. As I've told you, they're all heart. Love watching them play this year, not just in the bubble, but the makeup of that team, starting from Pat Riley to Eric Spoelstra to Jimmy Butler. But LeBron and AD were simply too much. And the bubble added a whole different element here. And maybe it's hindsight, but there was not a normal season, but if there was a normal season, the Lakers might have actually had an easier time when you come to think of it, because they would have had fans, there would have been a home court advantage there, and I know other teams would have had the same. The Clippers probably would have faced the Lakers, they would have had home court advantage, and maybe they wouldn't have blown a 3-1 lead, but spending 3 months in Orlando presented all kinds of new challenges. You had social activism that was in there. The Lakers handled everything and played one of their best games in the playoffs last night, and they get the ultimate celebration. They get to go home, and congratulations on an extremely well-earned NBA championship. Here is LeBron James after the title saying what fuels him.
Personally, thinking I have something to prove fuels me, and it fueled me over these last year and a half since my injury. It fueled me because no matter what I've done in my career up to this point, there's still a little rumblings of doubt or, you know, comparing me to, you know, the history of the game and has he done this, has he done that, you know. So having that in my head, having that in my mind, saying to myself, why not still have something to prove, I think it fuels me.
Chris Mannix, who covers the NBA for Sports Illustrated, will join us coming up. I got to take him to task on a freezing cold take that he had back in September where he said the Lakers were... I'll play it for you. This is what Mannix had to say back in September on this show.
You know, I get killed every year talking about the Lakers with you because I tend to be more skeptical as I was last season, but is it not more likely that the Lakers miss the playoffs than win a championship? I think that...
Wait, this year?
I feel that way right now. This year.
So the odds are better that they miss the playoffs than they win the championship?
I would say so, yes.
Wow. Okay. Mannix will join us coming up in about 15 minutes from now. Yes, McLovin.
I love your reaction. This year?
Well, he was basing it off of last year with what happened. And you turn over the roster, and it wasn't a great team as far as talent, but you had AD and you had LeBron James. And then the offseason, AD is noncommittal about staying with the Lakers. He can opt out if he wants to. I would think getting a taste of the title and still being able to play with LeBron James, and you're going to be in Los Angeles, you're going to be the favorites or co-favorites, I would think, going into next year. But I don't know what Anthony Davis's thought process is, certainly after winning a championship. But we'll talk to Mannix coming up. The Cowboys have lost Dak Prescott. The Seahawks are the first 5-0 team. The Falcons have fired just about everyone on that staff, including head coach Dan Quinn. Tonight, Chargers Saints, Michael Thomas will not play. It's not necessarily due to the ankle injury. It's due to him having an altercation with a teammate. Tomorrow night, at least we hope the Bills and the Titans will be playing. As we always do, best and worst of the weekend. If you'd like to email, you can. You can tweet at DP Show. And, of course, the phone number 877-3DP-SHOW. McLovin, what kind of poll question do we have? By the way, this program is looking forward to November 6th and 7th. The world's best thoroughbreds compete in 14 races at the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Learn more at breederscup.com/2020. Catch all the action live on NBC Sports.
Since everyone's obsessed with necks, why wait for the confetti to fall? Who do you got next year, the Lakers or the field? Mm. And I guess that's only a question if you assume Anthony Davis is coming back. But I was saying before the show, I think they're a stronger favorite next year than they are this year because the competition, all the superstars are spread out a little bit.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen in Milwaukee. If they bring in Chris Paul, if they do something there that helps them. And I think they're one player away of certainly representing the East. 76ers with Doc Rivers, not quite sure. Toronto is going to reload. Maybe they'll get more out of Pascal Siakam than they did in the bubble. Out West with the Clippers, what do they do? Denver is going to be a force. Portland, if they're healthy, is going to be a force. Houston, we don't know. If you said Lakers or the field, I'd probably take the field right now because I'm not quite sure what's going to happen with Anthony Davis. And, you know, there's a lot of credit that should be spread around with the Lakers. I start with LeBron because you know how I feel about LeBron. AD came in, and I think he realized what it takes to be a big-time basketball player. It's one thing to put up stats in New Orleans. It's another thing when you're on the big stage, you're with the Lakers, you're playing for a championship, you understand what that championship means to that city and what it means to what your legacy is going to be. You won a championship, and he was one of the better players on the floor. At times, he was the best player on the floor. You know, they're bench player, role players. At times, you weren't quite sure. Caldwell Pope played well. Rajon Rondo played well at times. Dwight Howard. You know, they just had a sprinkling in there that was just enough. I can't say enough about the Miami Heat and Jimmy Butler and how he brought out the best in his teammates. And you saw that. I mean, they at least got the Lakers' attention winning those two games. And Jimmy Butler. And I was curious just how much of a force Jimmy Butler was. And people thought I was crazy 2 games ago when I said, Jimmy Butler's not going to win the MVP, but I hope people consider him, put in consideration for him to win the MVP. It's only happened once with my beloved Jerry West winning the MVP when the Lakers lost to the Celtics. The 2020 NBA Finals might be remembered as a great duel between LeBron and Jimmy Butler. Butler scored or assisted on 51% of Miami's total field goals. LeBron scored or assisted on 50% of the Lakers' total. Also, consider this about LeBron James. And I'm not going to get into that GOAT. We're not doing that discussion because I'm not changing your opinion. Even when Mannix comes on, I'm not talking about the GOAT. We're not going to do it. LeBron has won 4 championships. He's been the finals MVP for each of those 4. In each of the 4 series, he has led his team in points, rebounds, and assists. Michael Jordan never had a finals in which he led the Bulls in all 3 categories. You're seeing something special. You may not buy into it as, you know, Paul Pierce doesn't think he's a top 5. Charles Barkley doesn't think he's a top 5. That's on them. For whatever their feelings are, Charles played in a different era, and he wants to acknowledge those players he played against. That's his prerogative. Paul Pierce, for some reason, thinks he's as good as LeBron James. Or forgets what happened when Paul Pierce didn't have KG and Ray Allen. LeBron is a top 5 player of all time. You don't want to put him in the conversation with Michael? That's okay. You don't want to do it with Kareem, or you don't want to put him in with Kobe? It's okay. He's a top 5 player of all time. And I can't convince, will not try to convince. It's politics. It's your favorite band. I can't change, and I won't. I just try to enlighten you and say what you're seeing is unique. He has played in 260 playoff games, and he hasn't missed one. And he averaging a triple-double at his age. Tack on 2 more seasons of playoff basketball. And by the way, his career is still going on. So I hope you at least appreciate it. You may not like him. There are times that I don't like his passive aggressive. I don't like that, you know, sometimes what he says, about teammates. But when I see him on the basketball floor, I am seeing somebody that is unique to the game. And hopefully people, while he's still playing, will appreciate that. But, you know, I don't want to infringe on anybody's turf here and say that he's somehow better than. I just think he's a top 5 player. Whoever else you want to sprinkle in there, that's up to you. I'll hold firm that LeBron James is one of the top 5 players of all time. And when he's all said and done, we'll look at him. This will be the greatest basketball career I think anybody has ever put forth. And I'm talking about stats, awards, longevity, consistency, domination. Like, who is the best player in his sport at this age? An age where you have to play offense and defense, where I can double team you. I had to laugh when Jay Williams, and Jay's not the only guy, but the former Duke player, said that LeBron should have taken the shot the other night when he threw it out to Danny Green. Why is it when Jordan makes a pass to Steve Kerr, John Paxson, and they make the shot, it's a great pass? But if LeBron throws a pass and somebody misses the shot, then it's bad. If Danny Green hits that shot, do we criticize LeBron? Maybe not. When Anthony Davis hit that shot against the Nuggets, that was a good pass. But if he misses it, we're like, LeBron shied away. LeBron did shy away from shots early in his career. Right there with you. I mean, I don't look at this, through rose-colored glasses and say LeBron doesn't do, or he has mistakes, or he lays eggs, or he, bows out of a, series against the Celtics. I understand all of that. You're seeing somebody play the game at an extremely high level, and they're doing it on the biggest stage. And he did it again against the Miami Heat. I know, in the bubble, didn't have to face anybody. Great. Okay. We can throw it out there. We can put five asterisks there. Kiss my asterisk. What other poll questions you got, McLovin?
NFL. I'm not sure where to start exactly, but have we been doing it all year? Why not jump into that MVP race?
No.
It's crazy how many MVP kind of guys there are right now. I'm going to give you these choices.
No quarterbacks throw interceptions anymore.
No.
Wait, I got it right here. This is crazy. There's no pass interference or you're allowed to pretty much have free reign down the field. Russell Wilson Jr. III, he's got 19 touchdowns, 3 picks. Patrick Mahomes, 13-1. Derek Carr, 11-1 interception. Josh Allen, 12 touchdowns, 1 interception. Aaron Rodgers, 13 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Ben Roethlisberger, 10 touchdowns, 1 interception. Ryan Tannehill, 9 touchdowns, 1 interception. There's no holding calls. It feels like, this is like college football. Because it used to be you'd go, man, these guys are completing 70% of their passes. Now it's the same thing with the NFL. It's kind of crazy. So Russell Wilson is your MVP so far. But there's a pretty good grouping in there. Yeah, McLovin.
Yeah, if you take out the former MVPs, Aaron Rodgers and Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, and take out Russell Wilson, the front runner, are any of these guys legit? Derek Carr, Ben Roethlisberger, who you told us to watch out for.
Ben is.
Josh Allen.
Yes.
And just one dark horse, Aaron Donald's leading the league in sacks for an inside interior lineman. I don't think that's happened in decades.
I would love to see him get more respect with what he's doing because we fell in love. We fawned all over, slobbered all over J.J. Watt. We should be doing the same thing with Aaron Donald, as great as he is, because he's the best defensive player in the NFL, and it's not even close. Yes, McClellan.
We kind of do a little bit. It's a little different than J.J. Watt, but
Aaron Donald has no national ads. We don't focus on him before the game. J.J. Watt could be tossing a football with a 5-year-old on the field, and, we're going to turn that into a Tom Rinaldi feature.
Actually, right, the storyline...
J.J. Watt was in Bad Moms. I mean, he was in a movie.
He crushed it, by the way.
Yeah, of course he did.
The story yesterday was that Aaron Donald almost ended our Alex Smith story.
Oh. I don't know if it was second or third play, but, Dwayne Haskins not only gets benched, he's inactive. And so Kyle Allen gets banged up, and I go, they can't put in Alex Smith. Like, I thought maybe you have an emergency wide receiver who played quarterback in high school, and all of a sudden he comes on the field and they go to commercial. I go, no, don't go to commercial. I just want to see him walk in or run in or walk, warm up. And then his family gave him a standing ovation, his wife and their 3 kids. And then he throws that little, pass in the flat, and I go, okay. Don't do anything else. Just hand the ball off. Like, I thought I was watching my son. I thought I was watching somebody in my family. And then all of a sudden, Aaron Donald is, doing a piggyback ride on him. And I go, oh, my God. This is a guy who, he nearly lost his life, nearly lost his leg. And here he is out there playing. Like, anybody else for comeback player of the year? Like, what else could somebody do for comeback player of the year? Like, if Dak Prescott somehow came back at the end of the year, that would be, something that might come close to this. Yeah, Paul.
It's such a great story when Alex Smith came back in yesterday, but as soon as he's in, it's like, all right, give him a snap and then get him out of there, because it was very tough to watch. And I was like, the Rams defensive linemen, they should have just taken a few plays off and let him ease in, just to be gentlemen.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Aaron Donald was not going to do that. What else do you have, McLovin?
Is it panic time in Kansas City?
No. But I did notice something yesterday. I thought Patrick Mahomes looked rattled. And I had not seen that in a long time. The Raiders played great. They did. And handed it to him. But, you know, he was 22 of 43. You know, I saw something different with Patrick Mahomes. It's not, hey, you know, let's panic here. He just got outplayed. And you're going to have these games. They're not going undefeated, obviously. But Mahomes looked a little rattled yesterday. I had not seen that. He looked uncomfortable. The Niners with Jimmy Garoppolo, like, that's just something to keep an eye on the entire season. Because I don't know if he was benched or just benched because he's still battling an injury. And I'm not sure when they brought in C.J. Beathard. I'm not sold on Garoppolo. I don't think he's a franchise quarterback. But you got smoked by the Miami Dolphins. Where were the Dolphins last week with my bet that they would beat the Seattle Seahawks at home? That was a surprising outcome there. Yes, McLovin.
Here, but the poll I really want to do, and it's totally aside from all the huge stories, do we love or just like all this scoring in college football? It is, I love it.
Well, I can't blame Big 12 defenses anymore because it used to be Big 12, they don't play any defense. The SEC's not playing any defense. Alabama gave up 48 and won. LSU couldn't stop Missouri. I came in on a Monday morning and said I felt sorry for Missouri football when they played Alabama. Like, I truly felt sorry watching a team play, and they beat LSU.
That phrase never been said. LSU couldn't stop Missouri. You were just first person on earth to say it.
Oh. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com. Or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Chris Mattick, senior NBA writer for Sports Illustrated, most recent column, there will always be a GOAT debate, but LeBron has made a compelling case that there shouldn't be. Before we get to Chris Mattick, Mattick back September 27th of last year said the following about the Lakers on this show.
You know, I get killed every year talking about the Lakers with you because I tend to be more skeptical as I was last season. But is it not more likely that the Lakers miss the playoffs than win a championship? I think that.
Wait,
I
this
feel
year
that way right now, this year.
So the odds are better that they miss the playoffs than they win the championship.
I would say so. Yes.
Wow. Okay. All righty. So at the time, why did you feel that way?
Well, the Lakers, despite adding Anthony Davis, were a team with myriad questions, whether it was the head coach or a patchwork roster. And look, I've been forced to eat some version of that clip for the better part of the last couple of weeks, Dan. But to those Laker fans out there, I'd like to congratulate you on all the times you tweeted and talked about and wrote about how Frank Vogel was the guy, that he was the man that was going to lead you to a championship. I would like to salute you for believing in Dwight Howard after all these years and all these teams. I would like to applaud you for saying that Rajon Rondo, for a disappointing first year with the Lakers, and by the way, nearly being replaced in February by Darren Collison. People forget a little bit about that. For believing that Rajon Rondo would be a difference maker and equalizer. Bravo, Laker fans. You are Nostradamus predicting all this stuff.
So you stand by your comments from September.
It was September. And I believe it was like the second week in July, Dan, or the first week in July, while the Lakers were still trying to wait out Kawhi Leonard, when they had like unofficially three players on the roster, when it was Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and Kyle Kuzma. We both know that winning a championship is more than just top-level talent. Now, all the Laker moves that they made, that Rob Pelinka made, they worked out brilliantly. But do not anyone sit here and tell me that you were sure about any of these patchwork decisions in September or even October.
Who deserves the most credit for the Lakers as champions this year?
You always got to start with LeBron. And not just because of the numbers and the performance on the floor, but you heard several Laker players. You heard Rob Pelinka allude to this last night, that LeBron's leadership in the bubble was invaluable. And I guess you can even perceive that. His leadership in kind of patching this team together early on and making it a cohesive unit was big. And then you get down to the bubble and all the trying circumstances to have a leader like LeBron James in that mix. I don't think you could put it, you know, I don't think you can calculate exactly how much that's worth. So not only was he producing at an extremely high level, a ridiculously high level for a player his age at this stage of his career, but what he did off the court was clearly influential with to the Lakers' success.
I'm trying to find the negative today because somebody's going to find the negative with LeBron. And I was wondering if they were going to say, well, it was an easier road in the bubble, which I don't believe, or LeBron after the game saying, I want my damn respect. Like, I'm just trying to figure out. So help me understand how us talking heads are going to spin this a different way from LeBron James and the Lakers.
I don't know how you do that. Like, it's not LeBron's fault that the Clippers fizzled out in the second round. It's not LeBron's fault that the Bucks didn't hold up their end of the bargain in getting to the finals. This isn't boxing. You play who's in front of you. You don't get to choose who your opponents are. And the Lakers did that. And, you know, gentlemen swept their way through the Western Conference Finals and, you know, needed six games to get rid of Miami. So I don't look at the schedule as you can't look at that as a negative. You can't, pin that on LeBron James. And look, Dan, I wrote last night, nothing will ever top what LeBron accomplished in Cleveland. I mean, that will always be the pinnacle of his career, not just because he brought a championship to Cleveland, but the circumstances in which he did it to come back from 3-1 down against the, you know, quote, greatest team in NBA history, at least in the regular season. That will always be number one. This, to me, is number two. Like this right here, what he did in this season with this group, in this bubble, in this harsh environment, and it was a harsh environment. It's not an easy place to go and win a championship. What he did there, this will rank as the second most significant team accomplishment in LeBron James' career. And anyone that tells you otherwise just has some kind of bone to pick with LeBron James.
We're talking to Chris Mannix, senior NBA writer for Sports Illustrated. His most recent column, there will always be a GOAT debate, but LeBron James has made a compelling case that there shouldn't be on James and other final masterpiece. Yeah, I don't want to get into the greatest of all time because nobody ever changes their opinion. Have you ever been around somebody where you have a discussion about this and they go, oh, you know what? On second thought, it's like politics. People yeah. just don't change their mind. People are firmly entrenched in this. I always just caution people, appreciate what you're seeing because you will not see this. He doesn't miss playoff games. He wins. He has hit more clutch shots than anybody in the playoffs in history. He doesn't miss games. He plays hard. He's averaging a triple-double at his age with what he's done. He's the longevity-wise, he's the greatest player of all time, in my opinion. And, you know, maybe Kareem, you can make that argument. But we try to fit him into a square peg, and he's a round hole. You know, it's just he's not Michael, never be. And I don't know why I have to defend him but it feels like there are just people out there who are never going to let him in that select group, that fraternity for some reason. Why is that?
Well, I mean, everyone kind of gets into their silos, right? When it comes to this debate, whether it's Jordan, LeBron, a few people on the outside that might say Kareem or Wilt or even Bill Russell into that mix. You're right. You don't change opinions in any of these types of debates. You can point out that Jordan lost multiple times in the first round. People don't care. They always point back to LeBron's finals record and say that's proof that he's not on Jordan's level. But I'm with you. For longevity to be in his 260th NBA playoff game, to post his 28th triple-double, to do it while being the best player on the floor in his 17th season, his age 35 season, I don't know what you can come up with to dispute that. And what I wrote last night, Dan, was even if you can say, if you want to say that LeBron is not the greatest of all time, there's probably going to come a point in LeBron's career where you can't say that because LeBron is not close to done. I mean, the Lakers, they're going to enter next season, assuming Anthony Davis re-signs, as a co-favorite at worst to win a championship. Then you go ahead, Dan, to the summer of 2021, and if the Lakers keep their books as tight as they are right now, they're going to have like $30 million-plus in cap space to go and recruit either another max-level player or a bunch of different players to fill in the holes around LeBron and Anthony Davis. So you can say four championships doesn't equal six, but LeBron may not get there. He may eclipse that number before his career is said and done.
And the Miami Heat, I loved watching them during the regular season. I loved the way they played. I have newfound respect for Jimmy Butler because I didn't think he was a superstar. I thought he was a very good player, and he got a bunch of younger players to listen to him. And the other places, the other stops, that's why I think he got frustrated. I think we looked at Jimmy Butler as the problem, and, you know, that's on me. Because I found out that he wants you to be great, and he demanded a lot. And those younger players, God, they played hard. And I can't say enough about what Riley and Spoelstra did for the Miami Heat this year and putting that and keeping it together.
Jimmy Butler and Miami were quite literally the perfect fit. You had an uber competitive player who held everyone around him to the highest of standards, joining a team with a coach and a president that had the exact same mindset. Not to say that Jimmy couldn't have accomplished this in Philadelphia. I think one of the great off-season gaffes of this century will be that the 76ers didn't make Jimmy Butler a blanket five-year max-level contract offer. That will go down probably as one of the bigger mistakes that we've seen in recent memory. But this was an ideal fit between player and team and a roster that was open to being held as accountable as Butler wanted to hold him to account to. And the Heat are going to go into next year in a similar position as the Lakers. They'll probably bring back Goran Dragic on a short-term deal, a big money deal. And then they, Dan, like the Lakers, are going to be in a position in 2021 to dangle that max contract in front of Giannis or whoever else might be out there on the open market. And you can't tell me, Dan, that the greatest audition that the Heat could have given for Giannis Antetokounmpo was how they proceeded in these playoffs. They showed Giannis on TV every night in front of him in that second round that they were a winning organization. They already had South Beach. They already had Pat Riley, his championship rings, but they showed Giannis that they could win. With this group, they could win. They could say to him, imagine what we can do if you join this team in a year plus.
When's the next season start?
At this point, I've long believed Martin Luther King Day was the earliest date. We might even see this bleed into February. In talking to a few executives about this late last night, nobody really has any idea. Like, they're playing it week to week. They know that Adam Silver wants to get fans back in the building. And if it means pushing the season a little bit further into the fall or the winter, rather, Silver might be willing to do that. If it means they can get X number of games all in buildings, all with fans, I think that is the top priority right now. But I would not expect teams to be back into training camp before January. And at this point, it might be early to mid-February before we see an NBA season start.
Thanks for all your contributions this year, certainly from inside the bubble and outside. And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Chris.
Bye, Lakers fans.
Chris Mannix, he's not going down without a fight there.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Say good morning to those listening around the country and now 376 radio affiliates in America. Fox Sports 1330 a.m. Juneau, Alaska is the latest edition, and we have a Juneau, Alaska quiz. Paulie, do you have a sampling there?
I've got a lot. I did a deep dive on Juneau restaurants, nightlife, everything. I'm going to start out easy, Dan. Did you know who can go closest to the hole population of Juneau, Alaska? Dan, you want to go first or last?
I'm going to go last. McLovin, you go first.
185,000.
All right. Fritzy?
263,000.
All right. I'm going to go 102,417.
Dan, you nailed it. Now, there was a couple of babies born last week, but so you might be up. No, 32,000 people. It's a lovely place.
Oh.
Just 32,000 people in Juneau.
Well, we're glad to be part of their lives.
Well, here's one for you.
Okay.
This is just a hypothetical. Which town in America has the most coffee shops per capita? If you had to pick any town in America, most coffee shops per capita.
Now, you would think someplace like Seattle would.
Right.
I'm going to go Juneau, Alaska.
You are correct, Dan. Oh, Juneau, Alaska. 34 coffee shops, 32,000 people. The coffee hotbed. More to come.
All righty. Best and worst of the weekend, as we always do. What you saw that you liked, you didn't like. 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address, dp at danpatrick.com. Twitter handle to DP Show. LeBron wins his fourth finals MVP. The Lakers with the win, closing out the Heat in six. And tonight, Chargers-Saints, the Saints without Michael Thomas. Tomorrow night, at least we hope, Bills and the Titans. Cowboys lose Dak Prescott. Seattle Seahawks first to 5-0. The Falcons fired everyone. Sometimes we get comfortable watching NFL football and we forget about the brutality of the sport. But I'm sure you were amongst the millions watching the Cowboys-Giants game on Sunday, and it served as a reminder when Dak Prescott got hurt. The Dallas QB took off on a run that he's made so many times before. The defender landed on his leg awkwardly, and the result was a compound fracture, dislocation of his right ankle. Underwent surgery last night, and if you followed Prescott through the years, you know that he's faced a lot of adversity. Lost his mother while he was at Mississippi State. An older brother committed suicide earlier this year. And we spent way too much in the offseason, way too much time discussing his contract. The Cowboys declined to give him a long-term deal. And now we know why players hold out, because there are no guarantees. Football careers can change just like that. And hopefully he gets a chance to reclaim his starting spot. He's a talented player. He's got the respect of teammates and opponents around the league. He's a very special person. And hopefully he gets that opportunity to come back and play. Here's Mike McCarthy, the Cowboys head coach, talking about Dak's injury.
I feel terrible for him. He was having a tremendous year, just, you know, in my short time working with him. He's made such an impression on me, and he's, you know, clearly the leader of this football team, and I have no doubt that he'll bounce back from this, and, you know, this will be all part of his great story. This will just be another chapter in a great story. He's a fine young man and an outstanding quarterback.
Dak has never missed a start. He's been the starting quarterback for the Cowboys for all 69 regular season games since they drafted him. And he had a TD reception yesterday. Last time that happened with the Dallas quarterback, 1985, Danny White caught one. But now you get Andy Dalton. They signed Andy Dalton, one of those oh-by-the-ways back in May. And I think people at the time thought, well, what's the strategy here with Jerry Jones? So they saying to Dak Prescott, hey, if you don't want to sign, we have somebody who has been a Pro Bowl player and gone to the playoffs with the Bengals, and he is, you know, from the area, and he would be the guy that we can put in there, not worry about. Dalton, 3-for-4, 72 yards, and, you know, when he came in after Dak got hurt, and he is a good quarterback. I mean, this is why you spent money. They spent $3 million for a backup quarterback, and that's a high-end backup quarterback. But now he's going to be your starting quarterback as you move forward. You also had Alex Smith. Alex Smith, who nearly lost his life and then nearly lost his leg due to an injury, and he came back after they made Dwayne Haskins inactive. And Alex Smith came in, first pass completed. Then he gave a piggyback ride to Aaron Donald that made me nervous. That's one of those that I probably would have done better not watching it in real time and then watching the highlights, because, I mean, I was nervous watching that. And his wife and three kids are there. They gave him a standing ovation. You know, of course, there's limited, you know, fans there, but gave him a standing ovation. I can't imagine what his wife must have thought. You know, because the kids, you know, they're just seeing dad out there on the football field. Mom knows this was really, really, really bad. But he got out there and, you know, showed that he could play. But you got to get Kyle Allen back in there. And Alex Smith should not be on the football field right now. I'm sure he got medical clearance, but, you know, what's that say about Dwayne Haskins? I don't know if they want Alex Smith to be their starter. But, I mean, if he's ready to go, great. But, man, it's been a long 2 years for him to be able to come back to this point. Yeah, McLovin.
Would you trade for Dwayne Haskins if the Washington football team says he's available?
But what do you... You're going to give up, a fifth-round pick for Dwayne Haskins?
Yeah, if that.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, would I rather have Josh Rosen than Dwayne Haskins? Probably so. I saw where there are reports, you know, the Jets are looking into what's the worst case scenario. You know, they're 0-5 and they're going to be on the clock for Trevor Lawrence, or if they don't, you know, leave it to the Jets, they'll screw that up. They'll win a game they shouldn't win, and, you know, maybe they end up with Justin Fields. You're not going to get a first-round pick for Sam Darnold if you want to trade him, because that's something else to keep an eye on, what the Jets do with Sam Darnold, because it feels like they're moving on. You know, look at Atlanta with Matt Ryan. Like, what do you do with Matt Ryan for a team that's not any good? He's very expensive. I mean, this team should not be winless. Julio Jones didn't play, but you should not be winless. But I give, you know, Carolina beat you. And, you know, give credit to Carolina. But Atlanta, you know, it felt like there was very little motivation there to have Dan Quinn keep his job. And now what do you do? Like, there's going to be a couple of quarterbacks that I think you need to watch in the offseason. Matthew Stafford is somebody that I would keep an eye on, because that might be where you bring in a veteran quarterback. Matt Ryan might be the other, you know, solution for somebody. Sam Darnold might be, you know, somebody who gets a chance to start over here. There's going to be some quarterbacks who are going to be available here. You know, the Colts are not satisfied with Phillip Rivers, and they shouldn't be. Your ceiling is your quarterback. That's the way I view this. So when you say, boy, how good can a team be? I always look at, what's my quarterback like? How good's my quarterback? Because if your quarterback is not, you know, good, bordering on great, or consistent, then that's your ceiling. And you're only going to go as far as that quarterback goes. And, you know, there's some curiosity that I have. Like Ben Roethlisberger, I said if he plays at a high level, this is a team to keep an eye on. They're a playoff team. And I still think that they are. You know, the Cleveland Browns, I look at Baker Mayfield. You're as good as Baker Mayfield is. Now, it shouldn't be solely based on that, but I need to know that the quarterback can do something when you need a quarterback to do something. Like, you know, last night, Russell Wilson was going to lose that game, and then he ended up winning that game with the touchdown pass. He threw an interception in the fourth quarter. I need to know what you can do when I have to have you perform. And there are certain quarterbacks where you just can't rely on him. That's why your ceiling is your quarterback. And if I'm Atlanta, why am I keeping Matt Ryan? But I don't know who's going to, you know, say, I'm going to take him at that price. Who's going to take Matthew Stafford and at that price? Not what you give up in return as far as the draft pick goes. You got to pay him. And salary cap issues in there. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Bring in the ESPN NFL reporter, Ed Werder, and his 23rd years ESPN NFL reporter covering the Cowboys since 1989. What's the mood in the Cowboys building now, Ed?
Well, Dan, we're not exactly allowed in the locker rooms after games anymore, so that becomes a more difficult question to answer. But I think you saw in some of the in just the on the field interaction between Dak Prescott, who's, you know, being carted off, and then what the players said in the locker room about losing their unrivaled leader. I mean, the thing that strikes me about Dak Prescott beyond his incredible evolution as a, you know, a passing quarterback in the NFL, when there were great questions about his ability to do that when they were drafted him in the fourth round. I remember back to 2016, and I walked into the Cowboys locker room before their season opener against the Giants that year, Dak's rookie year. They'd lost Tony Romo, if you recall, in the preseason. And I walked up to Jason Witten, who is as good a friend as Tony Romo has ever had in football. And I said, hey, last year you guys went 1-11 without Romo in the lineup. Why is this year going to be any different? And he said, you know what? We panicked last year when we didn't have Tony. That won't happen this year. And a lot of the reason for that and the confidence I have is that guy over there, number four. And this is just, we have a lot of confidence in him. He's handled every situation perfectly. That's just who he is. And so that's what they lose beyond the playmaker on the field.
What exactly is the injury?
It was an open fracture and a dislocated ankle. Whether there were ligaments damaged beyond that, we don't know. We do know that he was rushed to the hospital from the field last night. and underwent surgery by Dr. Gene Curry because he had the open fracture, and they want to eliminate the potential for an infection as soon as possible. They also repaired the dislocation. This is probably, from everything I understand, a 4 to 6 month recovery process. But people familiar with this injury who are medical experts believe that Dak Prescott will get back to being the same player that he was before suffering this injury. And in fact, the Cowboys announced this morning they're expecting him to be released from the hospital today.
And by an open fracture, this broke the skin. So the
correct.
Okay, the bone came
and
out.
We all saw what happened, you know, with Alex Smith when he suffered his gruesome leg injury, and the fact that he played on a grass field, that it was rainy. There was, you know, bacteria in the water that got into the wound that created all sorts of complications that jeopardized his leg and his life. And hopefully playing on an artificial surface in a much cleaner environment, you know, benefits Dak Prescott, and that doesn't become an issue. But that is the first concern in a situation like this.
Why the vitriol towards Jerry Jones following the injury? Twitter was on fire with being angry at Jerry Jones because of the contract situation.
Right. Well, you know, Dak Prescott is the third different quarterback ever to play on the franchise tag. Drew Brees did it once, and Kirk Cousins did it twice. And both of those players were able to make all 16 starts in the year that they played on the tag. So Dak's unique in the fact that he only lasted five before suffering a season-ending injury. And so I think there's this sense that, hey, you got first round production out of a quarterback you drafted in the fourth round, and you weren't fair to him. And the reality, I think, is somewhere in between. You know, ultimately, in July, when it came right down to it, Dan, and it's the deadline for either signing a multi-year deal or not, Dak made the choice. The Cowboys had a lot of money on the table. Obviously, it wasn't enough in Dak's mind. You know, they wanted a long-term deal. He wanted a four-year deal because he felt like other quarterbacks, that's what they had gotten on their extensions. The Cowboys' philosophy is to sign players for longer terms so they can spread the cap impact early in the deal. And it didn't get done. And so when the player gets hurt in a situation like this, I think everybody has great sympathy for him and not the billionaire owner who didn't get the deal done. And it's really, I mean, the criticism is fair from the standpoint of, you know, the Cowboys have always gotten their quarterback deals done. Like Troy Aikman was never put in this position. Tony Romo was never put in this position. But, you know, Dak made decisions along the way that contributed to that. And they did offer an awful lot of money. It's not like they weren't willing to make him one of the highest paid quarterbacks in football. But this was the risk he assumed, unfortunately.
What is the business side of Dak Prescott moving forward?
Well, it creates a lot of unknowns for the very facts that I described, that we've never been in a situation like this. Although, you know, thinking back on 2006, when Drew Brees played on the franchise tag, he was in a worse situation. You know, the Chargers already had Phillip Rivers on their roster. He was Drew was franchise tag and suffered a career threatening shoulder injury on the final week of the season. So he had a more serious injury than Dak and less time to recover before, you know, any team, whether it was the Chargers or the Dolphins or ultimately the Saints, would sign him to a deal. So Dak has more time than that. Whether both sides decide that, hey, given all the unknowns coming off an injury of this magnitude and the fact that they're probably not going to see him play a game, almost certainly not going to see him play a game before those decisions are made, it wouldn't surprise me if he winds up playing another year on another franchise tag.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And then you'll go back to May when the Cowboys brought in Andy Dalton. Was kind of a sneaky under the radar, you know, we're bringing him in, $3 million backup. What was your original thought when you saw that?
Well, it's not something that the Cowboys have always done, quite honestly. In fact, it's unusual for the Cowboys to sign an experienced backup quarterback like Andy Dalton. And I remember the day that they did, I reached out to one of the Cowboys' assistant coaches, Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator, and asked his reaction. He said, we just provided ourselves the best backup quarterback situation in the entire league. You know, Andy Dalton proved yesterday what he's capable of, coming off the bench for just the second time in his career, 25th career victory in the fourth quarter. I mean, that's going to carry a lot of momentum going forward with his new teammates. This is a guy who's won 70 games as a starter. He's been in the playoffs four times, hadn't won a game in the playoffs, but he's gotten the Bengals there many times and four times started their first postseason game himself. So they have as much faith in him as they could possibly have in any quarterback replacing Dak Prescott. But it's going to require a lot of adjustment on the part of Mike McCarthy offensively.
And even with the Dak Prescott injury, the state of the NFC East is the Cowboys. Are the Cowboys a playoff team, Ed?
Well, they might have to be.
They got to send somebody from the NFC East, right?
They've won two games, which is double the number that anybody else in the division has won, as unimpressive as they've been. And certainly, you know, they're going to be challenged going forward. They've beaten two winless teams. They beat the Falcons and they beat the Giants. And I think
barely.
They took over first place yesterday. I think the thing that was confirmed yesterday is the Cowboys' defense is really horrible. They gave up 34 points to a Giants team that had scored a total of, 47 the whole year?
Yeah.
So, and obviously they're without both their starting offensive tackles for the rest of the year. They started a rookie center yesterday because of the injury to Joe Looney. So they're compromised on the offensive line. They do still have a fantastic running back, a two-time NFL rushing champion. And they do have three of the best receivers in football. So the thing is, I think they've got to start playing a cleaner game. They've got to be more balanced on offense. They certainly can't turn the football over like they have been. The defense should start to get some players back, Dan, in the next few weeks, including maybe Leighton Vander Esch this week, which could make a significant difference. But they've been outscored off turnovers 60-10, including getting outscored yesterday 14-7 by the Giants. So that can't continue if they're going to have any success playing a backup quarterback.
Great to talk to you as always, Ed. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for the invite, Dan.
Thank you,
see you.
That's Ed Werder, ESPN NFL reporter, and he's been covering the Cowboys since 1989.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Tom Seaver, Bob Gibson, Lou Brock, Whitey Ford, now Joe Morgan, all in the past year, past 6 months here. All Hall of Famers there. And he was part of the Big Red Machine. He was the second baseman. He was a Gold Glove winner. He could steal bases, but he could also hit home runs. Great on-base percentage. I think 1 year led the league in on-base percentage and slugging percentage as a second baseman. And back then, you didn't have, it wasn't normal when your second baseman was hitting, you know, 25 to 30 home runs. That just didn't happen. But he was, you know, Gold Glove winner, and he was a great base stealer. But he also came to Cincinnati and provided power to a team that already had power. So, Joe Morgan at the age of 77. And you had, I mean, these are all in my wheelhouse. Whitey Ford, I'm not old enough to have remembered Whitey's greatness. But Tom Seaver, definitely. Bob Gibson, Lou Brock, and certainly Joe Morgan. But that's all within the last, you know, 5 or 6 months that those men have passed away. Yeah, Paul.
That stat you mentioned, I never even saw that before. 1976, Joe Morgan, 27, again, at second base, not a huge guy. 27 homers, 111 RBI, 60 stolen bases, rarely got caught. He hit .320. His on-base percentage was .444. His slugging was .576. Both led the league. That's like a perfect season for a second baseman.
Yeah, and this was, he won back-to-back MVPs, and they won back-to-back World Series, and he was part of, you know, what I think is the greatest National League lineup in history, because you can say you got a Hall of Famer at just about every position. You know, Pete's not going into the Hall of Fame, but everybody knows he is a Hall of Famer. Tony Perez, Joe Morgan, Davey Concepcion, to me, revolutionized shortstop play. Johnny Bench. Cesar Geronimo in center, Ken Griffey Sr. You had George Foster, who was in left field. I mean, it was a spectacular lineup there. But Joe Morgan has passed away at the age of 77. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app.